Hi everybody, it's a pleasure to have you back on this new episode. This time it's going to be a bit different. We're going to do it in English. Sorry for the Spanish guys that haven't learned English yet, but you know that for hotel business you won't have any choice. So, well, let's start today maybe. We're doing that in English with Jacopo.
Hello.
Hello. We're doing it because our guest today is Jelle van de Velde from Belgium. And obviously we don't speak Flemish, so we're going to do it in English.
And I can speak Spanish, so I would prefer to do it in English, yeah, if possible.
Let's do it this way.
Yeah,
Yeah,
could be better.
so yeah, welcome. It's real pleasure to have you here. Today we're gonna discuss a little bit about what's the future with you. You're a technologic entrepreneur, can we call you like this?
Yeah, that's fine. You can call me that. That's perfect.
So we really want to know your point of view on what's next, what's coming, AI, technology. You know that in hotels, it's a big topic, big dream, maybe more than a topic, actually.
That's
Jacopo, I
right.
don't know what you think about it. We might discuss it as well. I think it's a dream hoteliers have to have technology working for them. It's not a reality yet. But well, we'll develop. First of all, we'd like to know you a little bit.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit.
Where do I start? I would say let's take a little bit walk back to the past. I got born in a family of business owners. So for me, it was rather easy to become an entrepreneur. It's more like with a spoon that you learn how to build your business. And but actually, I didn't want to be an entrepreneur. Actually, I wanted to become a teacher. So I first did teacher education, and then I became after graduating, I first get to high school to be a teacher. And my father told me, "Yeah, forget it. You ain't gonna do that for 6 months. After 6 months, you're gonna run away." But you know how it goes. It's like you want to prove to your father that you actually can do this. But he was right. So after 2 years, I quit immediately because that this was definitely not something for me to do that. And the reason why I've started my first company was because of Steve Jobs at the WWDC. I'm never gonna forget it. In January 2007, he was waving actually on that stage with the first iPhone ever. And I was thinking, I was 27 at that moment, I was thinking, something might change. You know, the word mobile phone didn't even exist in 2007. So I met a guy, and that guy was pure technical because I have no technical background. Besides my teacher education, I also did an MBA. So I'm coming more from a marketing and sales perspective. So I couldn't program stuff, but I thought, come on, we have to do something with this thing, the iPhone, first iPhone. It was a little bit busy around it, and everybody was talking about it. And then I met this guy, and the guy was programming. I said, let's create a company just like that. And we started a company which each one of us put in 3,000 euros. That was it. And we had anything else that was really difficult in the beginning. But my father, he in his business, he's a car owner. So he emptied the what we call the night vault, where the components that are installed in cars during the day are delivered during the night in a night vault. So he emptied the night vault. It was more about this room, not bigger than this. And we just bought two little tables like that. And it was just enough space for a laptop. And within 6 months, we were actually already working with nine people. Because of the thing that everybody wanted to do something with the iPhone. And after 5 years, we were like with 30 to 40 people creating apps for mainly for children, like children books, games, etc. And there's a funny story about that as well, that one of the first major children books that we created as an application for children books that we created, it was launched in a weekend. And it was so big, the launch, that everything crashed. Literally all our servers crashed, but it was a big party for us. And you know why? Because that was the proof that it actually worked. There was a demand. So of course the owner of the
Wasn't
figure,
as happy as you.
exactly, he wasn't that happy, but after 2 hours everything was running up again. But for us that was really the proof that there was a lot of business in that. And after 5 years we got acquired. So I met a guy who owned a big company. It's called Cartamundi. It's actually a worldwide company. They do the production of board and card games. And within that digital stuff that we were making, creating applications with books and cards and games, we invented a card with a chip. And when you added the chip to the iPhone or the iPad, the game came up. So they were like, this is interesting. We should do that on the worldwide scale. So we started negotiating with them. And after 1 year negotiating, we were acquired by them. So then I stayed for 3 years to integrate everything, like that's the HR, the legal, etc., the informatics. And I had an option to stay for 2 more years, but I became as sick as possible because the corporate style is not what I like. It made me literally sick.
Why?
Yeah, and that's a good question. I've wondered afterwards as well, like what happened. And I think I was one of the youngest persons in the director board somehow. And I was used to work for the company, not for yourself. You know, when it's your company, you're working for your own income. You have to make sure everything is going well, that everybody has his wage every month, that the customers are happy. Within those big companies, those corporate companies, especially on the director level, I think in the hotel sector, it could be more or less the same. It's not about the people anymore. It's not about the customer anymore. It's about themselves and their next big car that they can earn next year if they decide this or that. So it was for me really difficult not to be there for the purpose of the company, but actually for the purpose of yourself. That was, yeah. And I think that's the reason, that's the answer to the question, I think. That made me sick. So I didn't do the 2 year option. So I left a lot of money on the table. But I left because I wanted to be happy for sure. And then first I went for some coffees, not knowing what to do. And I met a guy and he was a doctor because I was sick. and he told me, Jelle, we're going to do tests with you, not on the regular testing. Let's say we draw some blood and see, yeah, you're young, you're tired, you're working too hard. It will be okay. He did some tests and I was like shocked. He said, Jelle, this is not okay. You're having a body of a 65-year-old person. I was like, whoa, what the heck? And I say, how do you know that? How do you calculate that? Because if you go to a regular doctor, then they just pull your blood and they say, yeah, your cholesterol levels are a little bit too high, but you don't smoke, you don't drink, all is well, you're young, it's okay. Well, that's the problem, he says. Our regular healthcare system is sick. We need to make sure that everybody can live more preventive. We need to make sure that we invest in preventive healthcare. And that's actually something that made me think, whoa, in the Belgium healthcare system, you get paid to become sick because then you get the money back. It's all reimbursed. But if you want to stay healthy, there's no incentive at all. So it's completely insane. I thought, this is my second company. I asked the doctor literally that day, we're going to do a company together. And she said, well, it's a weird guy. I met him the first time.
I just told you that you're old and
yeah, exactly.
And now you want to build up a company.
Yeah, because I said, we're going to do company together and you're going to make me young again by building that company. And that's actually what we did. So we started that company again with putting some money on the table. It was more money than the first time that I had to pay because we needed to do a lot of investment.
Wow.
On the legal side, the procurement side, the everything about quality for sure, because it's healthcare, it's not games, you know.
Sure.
And but it went well, and we did DNA testing, blood testing, psychological testing, sport testing, everything to calculate the data and to add data into an understandable dashboard, like the dashboard of your car is actually saying, mm-hmm. Hey Fabi, you should go to the garage because your oil level is low. But with your own body, nobody's saying we don't have that. That was exactly our dream. We want to create a dashboard for your body, warning you before you become sick. And that's what we did. And it really worked well. We grew a lot. We grew fast. And again, there was a party. Called in Belgium Family Office. Pretty sure it's a European word that we use. It's our families that are investing money in companies to grow again. And they made a nice offer to be acquired by them because they wanted to multiple it, the idea, and they needed technology for the centers that they were building where people came in to do those tests, but they had no technology. So they used us as a technology layer for those centers. So then I said, okay, then that's exactly 3 years ago. Fine, you can buy my stock. And I stayed for 3 years to become the CEO of the total picture.
Steve Jobs says, stay hungry, stay foolish, no? You cannot not follow this, no, this quote in your life.
I think what's happening. Yeah, I think so. I think it's like, but it's all up to you to decide, of course, from yourself. When you're young, you don't know where you're good at. We have no idea. We think we know, but actually we don't know.
Well, it's impossible to know. Yeah. We discussed it sometimes in this place, like how can you be a specialist in something, being sure that that's what you are good at?
Yeah.
Maybe if you try 100 things more, you're going to be much better at some of them. So it's always quite quite complicated to, or quite sad to say, okay, no, I'm a very good specialist in this. I'm going to keep doing the same one and one over again. No?
It's crazy. I know both of you a little bit. And you have the same, I would say, methodology in you, which is actually find the passion. Mm-hmm. Find yourself the right passion. Mm-hmm. And if you find your personal passion and you try to make your business from your personal passion, you never have to work a day in your life.
That's right.
It feels natural. It feels natural to go on holiday like I'm doing and sitting here in this table and offering interesting stuff and talking about, again, work.
2 hours ago, making a video call for work.
Yeah.
Connected all the time.
Exactly. During the week, I'm never offline, but I don't care. I'm not feeling burnout at all. Burnout is not something that, to my personal opinion, is not something people get. It's not something like a disease. People get burnout because they do objectives they don't believe in.
Correct.
In combination with working for leaders where they don't believe in. And that's what makes people creating a burnout. And if people would make, let's say, find their passion and work through that passion and follow their heart in that, of course, it's not always easy to follow your passion. Imagine that you're a fisherman and you want to go for fishing. That's your passion. It's not easy. How can you make money out of it? But let's be honest, the society that we live in.
The difference with any other sector is there's no difference. The first day, you're not going to have your own boat and fish. Obviously not. The first day, you're going to have to go and fish for somebody. The second day, maybe you're going to be the best fisher on the boat. So you're going to be the best fisherman. So then they're gonna upgrade you to a different position. I don't know the fisherman's position. So
but
I'm not going to take risks. But it's the parallel with hotel. It's very simple. If you reach to explain to people, as you said, look for the passion, it's very complicated to explain that to a 22, 23-year-old person that comes out from the university and gets into hotels, and it's like, nothing is passionating here.
Yeah.
In a hotel, when you begin, there's nothing about passion because it's day-to-day work. It's more about tenacity. It's more about being there one day, smiling, next day, smiling, third day, smiling, process, doing it better than others, more than others, deeper than others, going further, whatever. But you just go looking for this passion and you discover it like 10 years later.
Yeah.
When you understand how everything works, how the different roles within the hotel get together, no? And I think that's where the passion grows.
Yeah, for sure. But isn't then a hotel as a sector, as a company, something very interesting to start as a youngster? Isn't that? Because then I can imagine that you can do multiple roles within, let's say, 1 year, 2 year, 3 years, and to switch between those roles. Isn't that interesting for
that? It is. It is if you understand when you start that being a waiter, being a receptionist, being a housekeeper, a cleaning rooms, serving tables, or serving wine are all as rich as any other tasks, and you're able to do all that on the same level and saying, okay, I want to try this, I want to try this, I want to try that. We've talked together a few times about our careers, Jacob was in mind, and they're quite similar in the fact that we've tested reception, food and beverage areas, events, housekeeping, and there was like just curiosity. And I think that what brings you to the passion is be curious.
Exactly.
And there's a little bit this point that we share, and maybe the entrepreneurship is a lot based on this as well, like curious of what's next, curious of what else can I do, what can I do better, what can I do more. So I think it's this look for curiosity, passion, or whatever. You maybe it's similar in any sector, and hotel it's amazing for that. It takes 10 years. So how do you explain to a generation that wants everything more or less within 1 year, 2 years to have the success of what they've built,
Yeah.
How do you explain then that that's going to take 10 years? And I always say it, and I repeat myself on this, because when I talk to students or whatever, I always tell them, look, there are 10 years until you're 28, 29. There's no way to avoid them.
Yeah.
There are 7, 8, 9, 10 years that you're going to have to do it. You're going to have to be a receptionist. You're going to have to handle guest complaints. You're going to have to clean the floor. You're going to have to come on your day off because somebody was sick. That's all you have to do until you get to this position that maybe you believe it's what you want to do.
Yes.
Manager's position. Just saying about people, talking about people that are ambitious and want to be managers. No? That's the way. There's no way to avoid that. Exactly. Otherwise, you're not going to enjoy it, because I think it's not even enjoyable. I don't know if you could enjoy it if you wouldn't have lived.
I think it's quite impossible. And the pillars is what you're saying, this fire soul that bring you to have more knowledge, not at the end.
Yeah.
That bring you more experiences, that make your brain develop. No, because I feel like my brain growing up all the time, that you're in the same hotel most of the time, you change department and it seems that you're in another world. You say, never been here in my life. So, but this exercise make you stronger, no? And make this fire, be fitted, really. I think also that I really hope, I have a big wish, that is that at the end of this conversation, you will offer us to open a company. Because you say in your story, you spoke with a doctor, and the next podcast you will have, you say, I spoke with two managers in hotel and I want to open a company. So my best to make your curiosity grow up during the conversation.
Yeah, that's good. Because I'm going to tell another funny story. That is that the third company that I'm actually working on was literally invented during one of our holidays. I was walking with my wife like we normally do every day, trying to have a long walk at evening. I was saying, how is it possible that these hotels have so less technology inside? How is that even possible? And we were like, what if it could be possible to uplift and upgrade the customer journey, only that, with just using some technology, because it's not that difficult. It's not that complex. And I was thinking and I was discussing with some people. And then from that point, the idea grew and grew. And now I'm literally investing a lot of money in a company, a new company that is creating a platform based on AI to leverage actually customer journeys, not for their feeling, but also for doing upsells from the hotel perspective.
What do you think is the actual moment of hotels, because it was one of the questions that I want to bring to you, that is, how do we imagine hotel we are leveraging, you know, the technologies from outside? What do you think is the level of implementation of technology in hotel, knowing that the world is running very fast? You know? So where do you think we are without knowing it, our backstage?
My own reaction, not please, my political please. Reaction.
Sorry, we didn't say in big before, but in this place, there's no place for politics.
That's good. That's good. Because my honest reaction, they're lagging behind, extremely lagging behind. If you compare it with the finance, for example, or other sectors, it's crazy how the hoteliers are really like lagging behind on technology. But I can imagine that it all depends on the group or the company that you're working in. If it's, of course, a big hotel group, then I understand that there are a lot of procedures and systems in place, and that it's difficult to make something happen and to move it forward. And there are always other ideas and other things that need prioritization. So I think it's understandable. But there, what I see now in some hotels is that it's actually not coming top down, which is most of the time done, but you know, it's invented in the corporate environment, and then we do that's some big idea over there, and then they're gonna do it in the hotels, but then they drop it, and then it's not working. How is that possible? That's because you need to do it bottom up. You need to do it differently, those things. Technology is, you need to find, it might sound strange, but actually it's never about technology. It's always about people. It feels strange, but you need people to believe in it first, to be willing to try it, to be willing to adapt to it, to be willing to embrace it, and then it will move forward. So you actually always need people. In one of our companies that I was working in, and we tried new stuff at the customer, then, for example, in the company Cartamundi, it was so difficult for existing companies to change their processes in their mind to adapt and embrace technology. Because, yeah, but we're doing these things for 20 years. Why should we change? Yeah. And that's the typical question that we get when we introduce this new platform, for example, the AI platform to bigger companies. It's like, yeah, but always the same.
Why do we change?
Yes, but look, I've got a question about this moment, because I think it's something I didn't have the chance to experience it, of course, because of the moment it happened. But back in the late 70s, beginning of the 80s, with computing systems and everything, the PMS, any property management system, didn't exist. Accounting system didn't exist, and you had this accounting sheet done by hand and daily on a daily basis from the reception of the hotel. So the question is, do you think we are with AI, like connected technology, smartphone technology and everything, at this kind of point where everything is going to change, like from accounting manually to accounting through a property management system? Now it was operating without AI and operating with AI. Do you think the change can be that strict and that big within 5, 10, 12 years?
Honestly, the market could be immense. It could be like, we could be blown away on every department. Literally. I mean that. What I see from an AI perspective, what is possible and also what is not possible. Let's talk about that thing later on. But from the first perspective, what is possible, I see multiple opportunities. It could be a huge market by itself within the next 10 years. But then, of course, we're living in Europe. And then Europe is saying, yeah, but the AI, what will happen? And we need to be careful with this. And, oh, you know what? Let's make another regulation about it. Right. And then you have those big corporates, the big ones, the big tech, as we call them, from the US, that, well, literally the AI is invented, where most of the sources are, the data modelings are. And then they say, hey, Europe, what are you doing? You want to join the revolution or you want to stay behind? And that's something that scares me sometimes. That we in Europe are going to be the inventors of regulation, not the inventors of new technology. And that's something we have to keep in mind. But to answer again your question, I'm pretty sure that every department, also in the hotelier sector, will be able to use AI. But honestly, not for the AI itself. It will always be like what I call augmented AI. With augmented AI, you will first need leaders like you guys to adapt, to learn about it, to know what it does, but also to know what it can't do. Because nowadays, the AI is a little bit hyped, I would say, and that it can do everything. But that's not true. There are levels which are still impossible with AI. And then it's very important to have the leaders to teach their teams to work with.
I was going to ask you about teaching and learning, because I'm really scared. I don't know what's your opinion, Jacob. I would like to hear you as well on this.
Sure.
I still, on a daily basis, explain to team members how to use basic Excel sheets. On a daily basis. I'm not exaggerating. I don't know you, but literally at least 4 or 5 times a week, I have to explain some point at some level, something about the Excel or Power BI or some PMS detail or some whatever. But we are teaching on a daily basis very simple technological things to our teams. So what's the transition?
Yeah.
How do we get to teach people how to use AI?
Yeah, I think I ask to myself every day about those topics, because I love AI. I love this big improvement that can help you on your daily basis. And I think it's a change that I'm not sure that I will see in hotels in the future. Because as you said before, that is really important. Most of the time when we speak with the teams, they say, but why change if 30 years are doing that? No, in the same way, no, with the same path. So I'm desiring to see this change, but I think that I'm not sure. I'm 43 years old. I have to work 22 years more or less, but I'm not sure that I will see that kind of improvement in the hotel industry. And it makes me feel sad, that because for me, I will teach today to all my team you've been 3 years, how to use the AI with the proper support, you know? So my vision a bit sad in that moment, you know, when I'm thinking about it.
But aren't you afraid, both of you, that when we won't be able to adapt that AI, to embrace that AI in hotels, that others will, and those who can and those who will, that they have multiple advantage on customer journey, finance, whatever we think about, operations, even creating cocktails.
Yeah.
Don't you think that they will win at that moment?
Possibly they will win. At least on one sector they will win. So then how do you reinvent? That's another very good way of thinking. Okay, it's the AI, the path for everybody. Because there is every time all the society goes in one way, normally there are at least three or four niche ways to go and make a lot of money on the other side, no? Like big hotels and resorts in the Caribbean or whatever. And then the big business for the last 10 years been Southeast Asia with little properties, very boutique hotels, high level spas that are amazing and everything. So there is always like two or three ways, no? So is there a future way to escape from this? And like, don't play in the big game, maybe, and play on the, let's say, genuine game.
Yeah.
Like on the natural game, maybe it's still possible. Maybe that's luxury in the future.
Could be.
Like, no AI hotel is a luxury hotel.
Yeah.
And hotel with AI are cheaper because they have nobody working.
Being conservative, not
conservative, you can maybe be the Creon or the Ritz or the World of Astoria of the future.
Yeah,
I don't know. That could be also a point of view.
If I could have another wish with me and you, we were working together, but probably in the future we will separate. I wish you to be in a conservative hotel and I want to be in Israel. If I could choose, I understand your point of view. I worked 16 years in conservative hotel.
Yeah.
I'm desiring to see something different. I'm thinking most of the time in how. For example, I want to bring into this table one thought that I have that is about the social media and the effect that in people as the social media, everybody know that is the addiction, you know? But addiction, after the addiction, I have feeling of guilty. No, that bring me back not to use the social media. My question is, how can I bring this addiction with a software, with a program, to the hotel workers that they feel addicted, but the feeling after it is
not
motivated,
guilty.
Not guilty. This is my company. It will work out. How can I create this addiction, but not in a healthy way?
Mm-hmm.
We were speaking about that achievement, some goal during your job. It brings you some achievement that everybody should see them.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the same feeling of social but useful because it's combined with your job. So I was thinking every day that not in the conservative flowers to put in a room. I would be honest, no? Because so what do you think it could be disruptive in a hotel industry in term of changing everything from outside, but you are more inside, but from you.
Yeah, from my perspective, I think that I'm going to turn the question around.
Sure.
To you guys' opinion, what is the most important task for a hotelier?
For an hotelier, a manager in a hotel? In my day-to-day job, for example?
I'm not going to emphasize my question.
In my point of view, is taking care of people that work with me, then. Apart from this, actually, all the other tasks are like side tasks, consequences. For my workers, the people in my team, it's taking care of their teammate and the guest because they are in direct contact with him. And this way, so it's very linked to what you said before, like in hotels, like in a company, technology companies, it's always about people and then about technology. Well, in our case, it's always about the person and then what he needs and technically what I can give to him.
Yeah.
But it's exactly the same process, I think.
In your opinion?
For me, enjoying. It's just one word.
Yeah.
That resume all the hotel industry, why I do it, because I'm enjoying. The staff is enjoying what he's doing, and the guest is enjoying. It's when you create this environment of joy from all the sides, is my aim. I feel satisfied with myself when my team is happy and enjoy this beautiful industry that is creating happiness and creating experience memorable, and when the guests enjoy. Now, from there to do it, you have all the process, the technical process.
Sure. Yeah.
But it's my mind is having fun and enjoying.
Mm-hmm. Well, to come back to your question, how you can then create with technology that fun, and to my opinion, the only objective for a hotel or a hotelier sector in total is honestly creating beautiful memories.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Actually, it's about memories.
Correct.
And if you could create beautiful memories where people say, even 3 years later, hey, Fabi, Jacobo, remember that time in that place, in that hotel, what we did, what we got, what the people did? That's magic. And honestly, take that objective, combine that with technology. How can technology help you to get to that objective? And that's the answer to your question. I think you should turn the journey around and say, okay, if the objective is that within 3 years, we want people to say, that place was so amazing, that place created beautiful memories for the rest of our life, what could technology bring you to that stage? Is it pictures? Is it AI? Is it interaction? Is it people together with technology? All that kind of stuff. And then you have what we call in the technology world, and let's be honest, it's indeed true what you're saying. In our first company, it was exactly what we did. You need to trigger dopamine.
That's
and it's honestly the not many people know that, but the movement from a phone on Instagram like this, the scrolling movement, I'm not sure if you know where it comes from.
No,
it's actually coming from the machines from in Las Vegas, the gambling machines, where you just pull, because they knew psychologically that when you pull it, your dopamine is getting up. Oh, you're getting excited. What am I going to get? And that's exactly the movement that they integrated in mobile devices to scroll, because every time you scroll, it's like dopamine. So, and I can understand you can feel a little bit pity about it. And we need to be aware of that many young people are so addicted to their phone that it's getting dangerous, that addiction, that the burnout of this world, it's going to be huge later on. But still, you can find multiple triggers that make it happen to be and to feel great about it, because it's indeed about enjoying. It's about indeed about putting the technology also aside in hotels. So therefore, I totally agree that there will be niches. But again, to the technology and AI, I'm pretty sure that those who will embrace it will earn a lot more money. And when you earn a lot more money with that, because of efficiency, because of productivity, because of operation, because of everything, yeah, then you still have the money to invest in new things, which could be niches where there is no technology in the hotel.
Yeah, but there are two points of view, like, okay, technology for the guest or technology for the management?
Exactly.
Because those are two points of view as well. I mean, I could have a 100% technological hotel from a management point of view with rooms that are auto-clean. No, because I think that the future of accommodation could be more on that side, nanotechnology, textures, materials that are unnecessary to clean because they disinfected themselves automatically. I could imagine like thousands of things that are much more efficient than what we do, which is putting a person to clean from 12 to 18 or even in some hotels 25 rooms a day through process, manual process with some material that honestly are not that different from the one you use at home. If people think that the housekeeping department has high technology material, that's not the case in non-hotel of the world. Some of them now are trying new things, but I really think that we have a huge effort to do on that side before the technology gets to the guest. And my concern a little bit is, like, I know now about conversation and everything that are like almost 99% about AI technology through guests, for guests. What about AI for workers? What about technology for processes? I think we are, I'm more into maybe the business intelligence aspect, no, view data and everything. And I think we're not even at that point. On my day to day, I can feel like not almost no test has a view, a real overview on all the data that is he's managing, and revenue management is getting better and better, obviously. Within the last 10 years, maybe it's given a big jump up front. But you can still feel like, okay, but we're still taking decisions about feelings, about it looks like it's going to happen. It's not about data. And those data are typical things that the AI could analyze instead of us.
Yeah.
So maybe there is a huge place to do that on that way and not changing the experience of the hotel itself.
Yeah.
And that's not a niche anymore. It's like the other way to do it. It's like, okay, technology for guests or technology for behind.
Yeah. And I think that's the way you, as a leader, that you should start with. That's what we call augmented AI. You should think about the AI not for the AI, but think about it as, how can we optimize processes? And processes could be multiple processes. And then you have to split them and say, this is for guests and this is for our team. And take a look at both, because some processes that you're going to optimize here can be used for guests as well, because you win time integrating your process AI, where then people can talk to people because they win time. And then you're creating memories. You know, we went there and there was always somebody talking to us and asking us, not too much, because then it's annoying. And to my opinion, it's all about, when you talk about guests, because that's my perspective, of course, it's two things that you should work on as a hotelier. It's speed. You don't want to wait as a guest. It feels strange, because then you're on holiday. You might think, what's the problem of waiting? We don't have time anymore. So as a hotelier, you need to sell time. Quality time, for sure. So that's the first one. And the second one is personalization. Use technology to personalize the journey of your guest. Try to figure out what he likes, what the preferences is. Then you can do multiple upsells as well on that. And then you can create the most beautiful memories out of it, saying, whoa, how did they do that? That journey in that hotel was so personalized on all the things that we liked. And maybe if they're moving around hotel by hotel, could be, if it's repeating guests, then good, because they will come back for sure. But if they won't come back, at least they will be an ambassador. They will tell friends and say, you have to go there. That was so personalized. And they might never have felt how you did it. And that could be because of the AI in your processes. So I think that's are the two ways to move it forward. But you're totally right, Fabi, that as a leader, you need to think about your people first and try to figure out how you would do it yourself at your level. And then slowly but surely try to integrate small steps. No big steps. Don't do that. That's the most common mistake we made in the 80s, the 90s. Big budgets, big project. Never everyone believed in it. And it did work. And that's the way forward for AI itself. Mm-hmm. Start small, but think big.
Sure. And I have a question for you both, because we are speaking about, you know, the journey of personalization, that somehow these topics in hotel five-star in luxury, we strive, you know, we think a lot about how to personalize. You know? I make a step forward in the year 500 years.
That's not a small step.
No, I want to have, with your presence here, the opportunity to dream a bit. Robots. We saw that Tesla, for example, is introducing his second version of his robots. It will be possible, it will be better for both, for the conservative hotels and for you that you're a member of, that see the future.
Mm-hmm.
How it could influence this personalization journey in the future? It will be better, it will be optimized, it will reach small details, or no one would be possible to reach this sensibility that human we have, no? So what do you think about?
I have a very clear opinion about what robots are going to be for. I was talking before about material, about things. I really believe that the easiest change is right now cleaning topics, purchasing, I mean, how do you say that? I don't know the word. Storage.
Okay.
All storage things, moving things from one place to the other, which is 60% of some departments work. It's like taking some drinks from the store to the restaurant and place it, serve it, put it on the. So all those things, I think they'll quite maybe 20 years from now to be robots or 30. I don't think it's much more than this for backstage robots. No, guest relation through robots. I don't see the value even within 200 years compared to a personal one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what else he could give compared to somebody that is dedicated to be a nice person.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I create a robot that is a nice person, okay, fine. And so they're going to be a robot, fine, nice, everywhere the same. So I think it's the unicity. It disappears, no? Kind of. So mm-hmm. what's the matter? You don't connect with people just because they're nice.
Because they're
friendly, sorry.
Yeah.
You connect with people because of something else, no? The receptionist that receive you, the that waiter that has a way of talking about the wine that it looks like he's been in all the wineries of the country. That little thing, even if you teach a robot to do it, it's not very impressive. I know they have all the knowledge they need. So what, it's not impressive from a machine. No, it's not nice.
Yeah, but I want to add something before your answer. That is, imagine the wine example.
Good example. Yeah.
Yeah. Imagine that this robot, that is kind.
Yeah, he has a whole knowledge of the wine about everything.
And he buy for you one. Imagine that when you check it in and you sign a contract, you have the access. You accept the access, for example, to all social media. Imagine. So because you accept this price. So he learned that you like some kind of wine, some kind of. And he offered to you three wines and he buy for you those three wines and send to your home directly. In after a chat of 3 minutes, brilliant chat, funny, and because you understand how you like be funny. That is not always simple, no? Because you understand all the video, the reels. So imagine combining all these datas. You are from another culture, so we know how it's difficult to connect with people from another country also, no? We want to make laugh all the guests here, but you cannot. If you all this data, probably it's possible also to have some.
Probably.
So we reach this level of personalization. I think yes, and I would love to see it. I don't know which part of the human being we will lose.
I don't think we lose anything, but I'm not sure that this is gonna be valuable for people. It's like okay. Just like to compare, just trying to put it in context. I don't know, in terms of times, it's quite hard to imagine, no? But like 30, 40, 50 years, let's say 50 years. In 50 years, 50 years ago, more or less, we didn't have any type of computer at all. So let's go 50 years up front and say, okay, computers are robots and AI and everything. I believe that, okay, everybody works with it or have it every day at home.
Mm-hmm.
For example, maybe the best comparison is your TV. People used to go to the hotel and freak out about the size of the TV in the hotel rooms.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even try to have big TVs now in hotels. You go to hotels and there is a 42 screen or whatever, mid-size. We don't even try to have less latest technology because we know that we never reach the level that people have in their day-to-day. And I really think that this evolution, when this robot does that already, you will have your phone already doing that on the day-to-day basis for you, which is what Siri, Alexa, or whatever, all of those are going through, no? So if you're at home and this guy that is in your phone already knows it, when you arrive at the hotel, the sommelier will know the same as Siri does, because the knowledge is in the world.
We are always late.
We're going to be always.
This is why we want to break.
The only thing where we are in front of everybody is in the kindness and the sense of service that we can manage. That's why I really believe in like the natural engineering side of the hotel services. It's like, I don't know how otherwise we could evolve faster or better than the rest of the society.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's quite hard to think about it.
These are the simple conversation between me and you after 8 in the afternoon.
It's like, oh, that's been a long day. Let's talk a little bit about philosophy, AI, and how the world is going to blow up.
My personal opinion on your question is like, we always underestimate what will happen even in 10 years from a technology perspective, and we always overestimate what will happen on the short term. That's the typically. What you were saying about 50 years ago till now is a very good example. Imagine that you go back 50 years and get everything what we have now and give that to that person and say, play with it. They will like, what the heck happened? I'm in the future, they will say, to their opinion. And that's the crazy part of it. Lately, I visited Boston Dynamics in the US, and for sure, yeah, robots will be there. Absolutely. And it will be there even faster than within 3 years. I think within 2 years, we will be amazed what some robots will be able to do. And then, of course, mainly from manufacturing, to my opinion. That's the one forward, but then it's getting more and more personal. So will there be a personal robot within 10 years? Probably there will be. I'm pretty sure that we're going to be able to have a personal robot at home, like we had a personal computer at home. 500 years from now is even more complex, because first of all, will our planet still exist? Or maybe the planet will exist. Will human beings still be able to live here? That's the first question. And then you have two ways in. You have the people that are the pessimists, I would say, with all the things going on, geopolitical, we had COVID, all those things, inflation and going on. And those are the pessimists. They don't see it very bright. I'm a tech optimist, the other side. So I'm always a believer that the way we do innovation and the way we do technology will favor human beings. It will favor our planet. So I'm pretty sure we will invent something that will save our planet first. And then if we take a look at the future, then firstly, I hope that people don't get fat too much because of the fact that everything will be done for them. So we will come to a society, honestly, where everything can be done for them immediately with technology, but then everybody needs a common income, regular income for everyone, that they don't have to work or do whatever they want, but then it's up to the people to decide what they're going to do with it. So yeah, well, exactly to see 500 years, not easy, but I'm pretty sure it will all be by technology, green air, green water will be blue.
It's so interesting what you just say about people having so much time that you have to find a way to make sure that they have
passions,
but was all hobbies.
Yeah.
And also I must say that this is our occidental, very very occidental point of view.
Yeah,
we are less than maybe a quarter part of the planet.
Yeah,
the population.
Yeah, yeah.
Here, well, between if we add United States and China, maybe we are almost half of it.
Yeah,
there is another half of the world that is living like 70 years ago here in that part of the world.
True. Yeah.
So there is like a big transition in between, no? Until reaching this point where, okay, technology does everything for us and we just get money for doing nothing. Well, maybe we're going to have to do things in the other half of the world. I don't know. That's a big conversation. And here we don't know about politics.
that's
going to be a huge problem.
Could be the problem as well, that some people indeed will have a lot and others won't have anything at all. And the funny thing is that a lot of movies, to make that other subject, are actually predicting pretty well the future. You know the movie WALL-E? Not sure if you saw it, with those fat people running around and the robots doing everything. Well, that could be perfectly possible within 500 years. And to my opinion, is we are somehow creating that future ourselves because of we're always trying to convince people about our ideas. And what I mean with ideas is it's a beautiful example of a monkey. There's a beautiful example of a monkey. Try to teach the monkey the value of money. To teach him that a bill of 10 euros, for example, has a value of 10 euros, that paper. You know what I mean? So for a monkey, we'll say, no way, well, what's the problem? he won't get it. What we as people do is always try to convince ourselves that this is something. This has a meaning. You know, so we're always inventing things. And we start pushing people to believe in what it is. And that's what makes us human as well. So it's something weird that we are creating our future ourselves by just thinking and just believing about it. It's crazy.
That's just, you talk about science fiction. I think it's an amazing topic because
I've always had this doubt about is sci-fi creating the future actually, because there are creative guys thinking what can happen, and then the technology, the tech guys, they create what they've seen in the
Exactly.
movies. Because you can see mobile phones and all those, they were in movies back in the 50s or in the 60s already, and before computers, before now you saw those screens, like transparent screens on Minority Report
Yeah,
movies, Tom
exactly.
Cruise, and they would move it tactile, and
Yeah.
that was 20 years ago, and 10 years after what you had the first screen. So I don't know if like creatives are
Yeah,
just always one step
you know
behind.
why? You know why?
Yeah.
Because the youngsters see those movies and then
They
they get the
dream,
courage
and they
and
want to
stay.
get make it real, no?
Exactly, that's what they do. That's how it does. My son, for example, it's literally already 15 years ago. Now mouses are fully not cabled. It's wireless, completely wireless. But 15 years ago, it was fully wired. So 15 years ago, my son, he was like this, very, very little boy. He came to my laptop. He took away the mouse. He took the cable of the mouse and put it in our vacuum cleaner. And then he started clicking to see what the vacuum cleaner actually was doing. So, you know,
Wow.
the youngsters see things that we do with technology. They see them in the movies. They read about them. And then they start doing it and thinking about it and dreaming about it and then creating it.
We need a movie about hotels.
Yeah.
Fast and
Exactly. The
clean.
future of
This is our company. About a
the
Netflix series about hotels. Eh? It's
Yeah,
the
could
next
be.
step.
But then
Okay,
it will
great.
be the 23rd century hotels. So
Yeah,
maybe that
yeah.
could be the name of the movie. And
Yes.
this way we design the future ourselves. People will
Yeah.
see it. The tech guys like you will start working on it. And within 50 years, maybe it's gonna be real.
We'll do a bet. This podcast will be seen by some rich family that owns a lot of hotels. Let's figure it out.
Oh yeah,
And they will say,
I know.
those guys have good ideas. And then they could come up and say, okay, well, let's make a Netflix series about what will be the next couple of hotels that are future friendly. Why not? It could work.
Yeah.
It could work.
It could, because all the series, and now we finish, they have the problem when they are long series that they finish the stories.
Yeah,
We have daily stories. We
exactly.
never finish. You know, our storage is infinite. So this is the good point for those rich family that they want to
Yeah,
make
yeah,
money.
yeah. And I'll
Moving.
join. I'll put in money as well, with pleasure.
We've seen sofas flying through windows.
Yeah,
That's just an example that, you know,
exactly.
Terry would be amazing.
Oh,
And
yeah.
it's based on real
Absolutely.
facts. So
Right.
there are things to see in
Absolutely.
hotels. Yelena, we're gonna go finishing. Thanks so much for being with us. Just
Yeah.
before we leave, I know that you wrote a
Yeah,
very
yeah.
special detail. I want to know the story.
Well, I think it's great that you talked about that to bring something with me, especially when I'm on holiday. I don't have many things with me, but I never how do you say it, add value to things. I'm not a thing guy, you know. I like technology, but I never add value to things. For me, it's like emotions are more like experiences, talking to people. Like today, you've created a memory I never will forget. Thank you for that, by the way.
You're welcome.
No,
My pleasure.
what
It's
I
the
meant
same.
is like within 3 years, people will maybe ask me, what did you do in the past and things like that, and where did you go on holiday? And I will re absolutely remember this day because you created a beautiful memory for me. Thank you for that. I mean that. And this is a story about a beautiful memory. This is actually a chocolate piece. You know, as Belgians, we are familiar with a lot of chocolates, but it's not about the chocolate. It's about what my. It's a story about my grandmother. My grandmother was born after World War I. And so she was like around 20 when World War II hit Belgium really hard. So my grandfather was captured by the Germans and he was taken to factories with a lot of people in Belgium were taken to factories. So the women left behind. So there was not much food and things. And what I learned about my grandmother is chocolate for them at that time was amazingly precious. It was like gold. And what she learned me was like, if you get a piece of chocolate, always break it into multiple pieces. Also for sharing with your guests, but not only for sharing with your guests. If it's your personal chocolate, break it in pieces and eat it one by one. You know why? Because it takes you longer, you have longer taste, you have longer value, and you have longer time to enjoy small things in life. And she told me that story and was like, wow, that's totally true. Normally when you have...
It wasn't that much about chocolate.
No, not at all. It was a story about learning to appreciate the small things in life. And by breaking big things in small things, you even can enjoy them more.
Amazing. I think there's nothing to add after that. What a story. Love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing all your stories. It was amazing.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And we'll see you all next time. Les veremos otra vez. Gracias por atendernos en inglés esta vez. Hasta pronto.